There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Century Part 2 underway here in Tuscaloosa.
Tua, he's definitely going to give it a go.
Lost the football, picked up by the Tigers.
What a shocker. LSU scoring so many points so quickly in front of this Alabama crowd.
Touchdown, Alabama.
And it's a five-point LSU lead.
Touchdown, Tigers.
Coach Ed Ogeron said the Tigers were coming. Today, they arrived.
Football.
One of the greatest games I've ever had the blessing to see in person. Welcome to College Football Live with David Pollack and Greg McElroy. I'm Marty Smith. Heather Dinich will join us momentarily. For the first time since 2011, the LSU Tigers get it done against the Tide. And Coach Orgeron said it very plainly after the game, gentlemen. They were tired of hearing it. They were tired of dealing with it. And they went in there on Saturday night in Bryant-Denny Stadium, and they did something about it. David, I'm going to start with you. What did we learn in LSU-Alabama Game of the Century 2.0 Saturday evening?
That's what he said to y'all after the game, but in the locker room, it was obviously vastly different. What I learned was that LSU is going to have their next Heisman Trophy winner with Joe Burrow. It's been since 1959, I think, since LSU had a Heisman Trophy winner. It's been that long, and Joe Burrow showed you it doesn't matter who they play week in and week out. He carves them up, and the LSU offense has been unbelievable. Think about that game when they did win 8 years ago, Marty, when you were talking about it. It was 9-6. And this was totally different. A lot of fun to watch. And Joe Burrow, yes, sir, you can do this and do that. And then you can do the stiff arm too, because he's going to be your Heisman winner.
He was amazing, and it was a Heisman moment. I mean, there's no denying that. He was so accurate with the football. He was so dynamic, even with his legs. Even though he's not a ridiculously great athlete, he made enough plays with his legs to keep you honest. But I still came away from it thinking that all the explosiveness that we've seen from Alabama's offense in the last few seasons, it's come at the expense of their defense. And you saw so many guys open on the middle of the field that I don't ever remember seeing from Alabama's defense. I saw really unsound tackling. I saw guys that had a tough time leveraging the football. I saw so many mistakes made by an Alabama team that I have not seen in quite some time, including fumbling as you're running with the football, throwing an interception at the end of half, dropping a punt snap, having illegal substitutions on defense. There were just so many mistakes that are uncharacteristic for this Alabama team, and they have to be kicking themselves a little bit by putting themselves behind the eight ball with how they played in the first half, both offensively and defensively.
But, Greg, what did it say about Alabama's resilience that they find themselves down 20 after fumbling in the red zone, after bobbling a punt snap, unforced errors that you just don't typically see from a Nick Saban team, and they get themselves in the fourth quarter within a touchdown of winning the game?
I mean, they're not going to give up. I mean, that's a championship pedigree with a very proud tradition. You knew they were going to fight, scrap, claw, do whatever they could to get back in the game, and I give them credit for that, but they have to be looking those first 30 minutes thinking, man, how do we let it get that one-sided? How do we let it get away from us that quickly? So I think there are a lot of things to take away that were positive in the second half, but the first half is really difficult to swallow for Alabama.
And, Greg, we take all those mistakes that they typically don't make. You see a hobbled Tua, whether you want to admit that or not, and if everybody wants to get mad across the country, have at it. He was a hobbled Tua, and they still had a chance to win the game. So what this is going to say in the end to the committee is going to be that Alabama's going to be right there towards the end of this, and we're going to be talking about Alabama being in the final, you know, in the college football playoff.
We're going to be talking about it, David, but I can tell you one gentleman who is not interested in talking about it is Nick Saban. Here's what he had to say.
The number one thing that I'm concerned about, just so everybody gets it, is how we complete the season. You know, I don't want to talk about anything other than the game that we have this week. We're not making any predictions or whatever.
Now let's bring in our college football playoff committee expert, knower of everything college football playoff, Heather Dinich. So, Heather, what do you make of this loss for Alabama? How far do you expect they'll fall?
Well, tonight, I don't think they'll fall further than four, to be honest. I think when you look at it on paper, it's hard to see Alabama dropping behind one-loss Georgia. Oregon and Utah didn't play. Penn State should sink down, I think, probably around 10. So I think they're still the committee's highest-ranked one-loss team tonight. But at the end of the day, guys, I think Alabama is in trouble. I think their strength of schedule, not having a chance to win the SEC, is going to hurt them. And I think it's going to be a very, very close call. And it's different than it was in the past when they got in without winning the SEC. Because that year, if you remember, they beat Mississippi State and LSU, which were both ranked by the committee. This year, Auburn's their best chance down the stretch.
Auburn's their best chance, but the good news for them is Oregon already lost to Auburn. So they have a chance to have a leg up on Oregon if Oregon is that team that beats Utah. But I don't see them at four. I think they'll be at five. If we're going to talk about what they have accomplished, if they don't have a quality win and you look at Georgia having two quality wins, I think they'll actually be behind Georgia right now. But they'll both have opportunities against Auburn over the next couple weeks, and Alabama will play them in a couple weeks. Georgia plays them this week to kind of have a comparison with Alabama and Georgia as well.
I think Alabama is the fourth best team in the country at the very worst. I really believe that. Now, will the committee reflect that? They've always valued resume and eye test kind of hand in hand. We're going to find out tonight what their priorities are. Do they value the eye test because Alabama checks every box in that regard? Or do they value resume? Because you can make a pretty clear argument that not just Georgia, but Minnesota has a better win than Alabama. Yep. You can make a case that Penn State has two better wins than Alabama. Right now, Alabama's best win is on the road at a 6-3 Texas A&M team, and I'm not sure that's going to hold up really all that much more because A&M still has some difficult games down the stretch against both LSU and at Georgia. So it's really tough right now to assume that Alabama's in a great spot, but I do think they're probably the fourth best team if I were to rank them based on what I've seen in the first couple months of the season.
But the debate that we have here going, right, is the exact same thing that will be reflected in the selection committee meeting room on selection day. And if the majority of them don't agree that Alabama is, quote, unequivocally, no doubt, one of the four best teams in the country, that's when it's a problem. And to me, you guys talked about those mistakes in the first half. To me, that opens the door to debate. And what we see down the stretch, and the common opponent in Auburn is a fair point. It's one of the things, though. It's a piece of the puzzle. Don't forget, there's also conference championship games and strength of schedule. And Alabama won't be able to check either of those boxes if they are tiebreakers and they get into that debate with a Pac-12 champ.
See, a Pac-12 team like Oregon, I think the debate for the schedule is going to be very comparable. I don't think it's going to be, it's not like you're going to look at the Pac-12 and look at Oregon and go, wow, their strength of schedule. Who is Oregon beat? And you want to talk about penalizing Clemson in the same vein for a 1-point loss or 1-point win to North Carolina? They barely beat Wazoo, could have lost that game. So I think if we're taking all this into account, let's not act like Oregon and Utah have this amazing strength of schedule when you can't even point to a quality win right now on their schedule. When we talk Oregon, it was a close win at Auburn. They dominated Auburn. It was close. They should have won the game. It's not about like who they've beaten to this point yet.
Fair point, but I will say that whoever wins that Pac-12 championship game is going to have a better win right there than anything on Alabama's resume.
Assuming that both of them are undefeated at that, or assuming then that don't none of them lose before that point, Heather.
Correct.
That's what you're assuming, which might not be the case.
True. Fair point.
GMAC mentioned a moment ago the impact of the eye test as a major criteria point for the committee. There's no doubt that they unequivocally, Heather, chose the eye test last week as they chose Ohio State as number one over LSU, who had three top 10 wins at the time. They now have four wins over top 10 opponents. So I will ask you very simply, Heather, who's number one?
LSU. I thought it was going to be LSU last week. You're right about the eye test. I will be shocked, though, if it's not LSU tonight, because now they have a win against a 6-win Texas team and Alabama and Auburn and Florida. I mean, they've got Joe Burrow. They've got the eye test. They've got the resume. I'd be stunned if they're not number one.
they should be number one. But the reason that Ohio State was number one and should be number one is because of Chase Young. Everybody else doesn't have Chase Young. Ohio State does. Now, with the Chase Young suspension looming and what that is, I think, you know, an idle week and obviously a big win for LSU. And I say idle week, that was basically an idle week for Ohio State. I think LSU will be at number one this week, and especially eyeballs now pointing to Columbus and Chase Young.
If you think last week was an idle week, imagine what you think about Ohio State's game this week against Rutgers. So I look at Ohio State, and I think Ohio State's excellent, but I just can't argue against what LSU's accomplished at this point of the season. And they are truly remarkable with their wins and what they've been able to do against teams that have challenged them in different ways. Great defenses and great offenses, they've had an answer for both. So I think LSU unequivocally at this point has done more throughout the course of the 9-game season that we've seen than anybody else. I think Ohio State's tremendous and is playing excellent football. And if those two teams were to square off, I'd have a really, really difficult time not picking Ohio State. But based on what we've seen to this point, LSU has to be number one.
David mentioned the Chase Young scenario for the Buckeyes right now. That committee is obviously going to take that into effect when it's one of the best, if not the best player in the entire nation. Heather, what's your perspective on how that might impact the committee's decision tonight?
I don't think it will impact their decision tonight at all, to be honest, because it didn't impact Ohio State, and that's what they look for. Are they still a top four team without him? Oh, you better believe they were. But what's interesting is that last week, Selection Committee Chair Rob Mullen specifically called out, quote, the best defensive player in college football. That's one of the reasons they were number one. So we'll see how long he's off the field, if it does matter down the stretch, but I certainly don't think it will matter tonight because it didn't matter last week.
Going to be fun to see where they put Clemson, where they put Alabama, what they think about Minnesota, which we'll get into very shortly. But first, it's time for the Capital One fan vote. Let's discuss that Capital One fan vote. Who's the best among these unbeaten title contenders? Is it Clemson? Is it LSU? Is it the Ohio State Buckeyes? Go to twitter.com/SportsCenter to check out this week's Capital One fan vote. And weigh in yourself. Minnesota and Baylor. How about it? The Gophers up in Penn State and Baylor wins a heart attack. Two really good undefeated teams. We'll discuss their case for the top four coming up next on College Football Live. Now, for this week's Ultimate Performance presented by BMW, it's Rashad Bateman. Wide receiver for Minnesota, 7 receptions, 203 yards. That's the second most in school history. And a touchdown in the Gophers' huge win over Penn State. Ah, here's where it's all going down. The College Football Playoff Committee Room. Earlier today, as they debate who's in the top four. Not an easy conversation to have with so many great teams and teams who are good and have suffered losses. One of the biggest decisions that they'll face is where they're going to rank these three undefeated teams, Clemson, Baylor, and Minnesota. All three have relatively weak strengths of schedule, but the one differentiator Clemson has, they just happen to be the defending national champions, and they have not lost since New Year's Day 2018. Not bad for Dabo and the boys. All right, let's discuss the Gophers first. Huge win over Penn State on Saturday. How high will they go, Heather?
I think they jump all the way to number 9. I don't think the selection committee goes any crazier than that and flips them with Penn State. But that's an unprecedented leap because no team in the history of the rankings so far has jumped more than 6 spots into the top 10. But that being said, people have to remember that they were 17th to begin with because the rest of their schedule was atrocious.
The problem that I have is that we're supposed to take a snapshot every week, and what happened last week and where they were ranked last week, clearly it was uninformed and it was wrong. At 17, they were entirely too low. So I think if we're starting with a blank slate like the committee does every single week, then how do we evaluate what Minnesota is after one of the biggest wins of the season? Beating number 4 ranked Penn State and beating them convincingly, by the way. I know that they had the OPI at the end of the game, all those other things, but that was a convincing victory and they looked really, really dynamic offensively and opportunistic defensively. So I for one think they should be no lower than 6. in the rankings this week. I know, like you said, Heather, that's an unprecedented leap, but frankly, we shouldn't worry about last week. Last week's in the past. It should be a blank slate based on what we have through nine games, and through nine games, they've been awfully impressive.
I feel exactly the same way. I mean, literally, that's exactly what I wanted to make a point was that it's not the same every week, and it doesn't really matter. It's a blank slate. And if you watched Penn State throughout the season, that defense has been great. It has been lights out. Minnesota lit them up, had a ton of success. Tanner Morgan was 18 of 20. Bateman was doing his thing defensively, created turnovers. How are they not ahead of Oregon? How are they not ahead of Utah? How are they not ahead of everybody that's a one-loss team in the picture? Everybody that's a two-loss team in the picture at this point, I could see them moving ahead of all of them. And then I debate whether they go now from six to five, six, four, five, six range. I would be perfectly comfortable with them being in any of those spots from what they did a week ago.
Their strength of schedule is going to hold them back, I think. It's what held them back to start with. And remember, that was a great win against Penn State, a huge win. It's their only win against a ranked opponent. And yes, it was top four, but as you reevaluate Minnesota, isn't it also fair to reevaluate Penn State? I will say this, Penn State, don't write them off, because if they run the table and beat Minnesota and avenge that loss in the Big Ten championship game, we're talking about the Nittany Lions again in the top four. And unlike Baylor, Minnesota has plenty of opportunities, Iowa, Wisconsin, Big Ten championship game, yep, to really strengthen its argument in this conversation.
But it's interesting. Alabama didn't have a real quality win, and nobody points to a quality win. But we're okay with them being way up there. So why can't Minnesota get the same benefit of the doubt? Listen, Minnesota struggled early in the season, but last 4 weeks they have really kicked it in gear. And offensively, they know exactly who they are, what they are. So why can't Minnesota be afforded the same right to move up a ton of spots, to move up 11 spots, to move up however many spots necessary to put them where they belong?
Because unlike Alabama and Clemson, which were beating those lesser opponents by, I don't know, like 40 points a game, Minnesota needed overtime, I think, to beat Fresno State.
Last three games before Penn State,
different. September was ugly. Let's get rid of September. If Minnesota, we need to just eliminate that part of the schedule. But October and November, it's been impressive.
Frying pans to the head in November. October.
The turnaround Matt Rhule has orchestrated at Baylor is remarkable. Greg, how high do you have Baylor?
I don't love them. I would have them at 11 right now. I know that they're undefeated. We just referenced Minnesota and how they're undefeated as well. They have one thing that Baylor does not. So far, Baylor does have some impressive wins. They, of course, beat Oklahoma State on the road. Kansas State was a good win as well. But I think Baylor, because of how they haven't looked very dominant in some of their performances, not all that unlike Minnesota, but they needed, frankly, luck to beat Texas Tech. I thought they played really poorly against West Virginia last week against TCU, and TCU is kind of an up-and-down team. They, of course, needed several overtimes. So I'm not as sold on Baylor at this point. I think if they were to beat Oklahoma this weekend, they would have a huge leap for me, like I had Minnesota making a huge leap after their win against Penn State. But I would have them a little bit further down the rankings behind a couple one-loss teams. I would have them even behind Oklahoma, who lost to Kansas State a few weeks back. So I'm not as sold on Baylor at this point, knowing that they've kind of played to the level of their competition.
I agree with you, and I'll give you guys the nightmare scenario for the Big 12. Oklahoma goes and beats Baylor this weekend, and then Baylor turns around and beats Oklahoma to win the Big 12. That's how the Big 12 eliminates itself, because I certainly do not see a one-loss Baylor as Big 12 champ getting in this thing.
Well, I mean, I think the Big 12 is in trouble regardless of whether that scenario happens or not. It's going to be a tough uphill battle for the Big 12, but let's look at the out-of-conference for Baylor, too. Beginning of the season, it was really bad. So you start with a bad out-of-conference, and listen, you found a way to beat – you dominated, first of all, Oklahoma State, but West Virginia 17-14, triple overtime against Texas Tech, double overtime against TCU. If you watch this team week in and week out, defensively, I think they're really good and they're very consistent, but offensively, they're not, and they're not one of the top – I would put them behind Florida. I would put them behind Auburn. I would put them in literally behind some of those two-loss teams, and I know that might upset some people, but I just don't. You know what else is very interesting, by the way, guys? All y'all. Here's what's very interesting. 8 years ago, we talked about a 9-6 game with LSU and Alabama and how ugly it was. The whole country talked about the Big 12 dropping 50 a game and all that stuff. And this past week, the SEC goes like 40-something, 40-something, and Baylor and TCU go 9-9.
Right.
So if you think football's not cyclical and works in cycles and stuff, you're wrong, but it's just interesting point of views.
Coach O said to me last week when I was in Baton Rouge that the SEC offensively is now basketball on grass. He's right. You just heard G-Mac mention the fact that the Sooners are headed to Waco for a huge one. College game day will be there. It's a matchup of the top teams in the Big 12, number 9 Oklahoma, and unbeaten number 12 Baylor, 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific on ABC and the ESPN app. It's finally here! You can download the Disney Plus app right now and start streaming the best of Disney, Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, and National Geographic ad-free and wherever and whenever you want them. For more, go to DisneyPlus.com. ExxonMobil's unexpected energy has us looking at East Lansing, Michigan, where a last-minute TD by the Fighting Illini capped off the biggest comeback in school history, and they're bowl eligible for the first time in 5 years. How about Michigan transfer Brandon Peters balling at quarterback, the Fighting Lovey Smiths? What do you think, G-Mac?
I love it, man. We saw him a couple weeks ago against Michigan, and it's amazing to see the turnaround that's gone on, and it certainly has been unexpected, that's for sure. Speaking of unexpected, our very own Marty Smith in Tuscaloosa this past weekend surprised a reporter who was struggling through a stand-up. This was Jordan Patterson, and our Marty Smith had some words of encouragement for him.
It's real. He's just perfect. I can't stand him. Kill him.
You mind if I get a picture with
you? No.
Because thank you for everything you do,
man. Brother. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you for the advice.
Keep plowing.
You're doing a good job. Thank you, sir.
Well done, Marty. Excellent stuff. Jack Patterson struggling a little bit, but you built him up, man. That was awesome.
It's been quite a day when that was brought to my attention that he put that out there. And ultimately, it's a reminder that the smallest of kind gestures can go so far. You're the man, Jack. I appreciate you, brother. Keep on getting it.